This is RSBNB Update, episode 574, recorded Thursday, June 30th, 2016. You're not the boss of me. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. This week covers Telos, RuneScape's supposedly toughest boss. And we're going to be discussing that and all of your other good RuneScape news of the week. But before we do that, let's just have a look at the panel this week. And that includes, of course, Dave, as per usual.
Hello.
And Mr. Bistro, who you guys last heard at the God Wars 2 release. So welcome back.
Hello, hello.
You are our combat expert, and you rescue us from the intricacies of the PVM system and the PVM community that is what it is, which we'll save for another episode down the road.
Apparently.
But, yeah. What do you think of the PVM community? Just off-the-cuff remark here.
Me or Dave?
You.
Okay. The PVM community, I think it's a little bit spoiled sometimes, especially because it seems like Jagus was really trying to push the 120 level for Slayer. I didn't think that was necessary, and that kind of peeved me off. But bosses seem to come around so often, as opposed to other like big updates.
Yeah. End of April, God Wars Dungeon 2, and end of June, the beginning of another solo boss Telos. So
yeah, I would really like to see them go back towards a little bit more skilling oriented, like kind of like we saw in 2008.
Yeah, we need to talk more about that at some point, because it really speaks towards the future of the game, I think, and the direction of the game in which it's going. But we'll save that for another show, literally. So anyways, you guys are both here, thank you for doing this, Mr. Bistro. Because if not, Dave and I would be winging it. We would have.
Yeah, you don't want that for the the sanity of everyone listening and us. You don't want that, because it's definitely not going to be as in depth as someone who actually enjoys it.
Yeah, because so, I would have had to kill all four of the God Wars 2 bosses in a couple of hours, which I think I could do, and then would have had to take a running attempt at Telos, which probably would have ended horribly. But you, on the other hand, have been successful.
Yes.
And that's something I think is that the PVM community itself is marked up to be something that is hard to get into and, hard to understand. But at the core of it comes down to the RuneScape combat system, which when you slice it, really isn't that bad.
No.
So
I have to say that getting into bossing really takes a group of friends or a clan, where you go and do something and you get used to it, and those numbers can slowly dwindle, so it takes less and less people to do it until you're like optimized for like raids. It only takes like three or four people, or for this boss, for instance, it just takes a couple times of practice, and you really have to be able to be okay with losing some cash to refresh your armor if you die, but that's just part of the game, part of learning it. It's going to pay for itself in the end. And if it's something that you enjoy, you won't have a problem doing that.
Exactly. So, all right. So Telos is, of course, the boss that exists and lives in the heart of Gilinor, linked to the God Wars Dungeon 2, of course. So, as it turns out, that messing with the anima in the heart of Gilinor was not a good idea at all. Telos has awoken, GIX says. This towering new boss exists to purge the entire planet of life when the precious anima resource is threatened. And you will be taking him on in a new multi-phase fight where the more you risk, the greater your rewards. All right. So, just a bit of a disclaimer before we get going on this, for anyone who was not aware. In order to access Telos, you must obtain four sigil fragments, which you get by defeating each of the God Wars Dungeon 2 generals, and you combine them. It's been told that you get it as 100% drop as of last week's update. So they did tell us to prepare for that. So after that, you use it on the door, and then that door is marked as open, and then you're able to enter inside a great crystal tree of anima near the dungeon's entrance, and then the fight begins. So what do you think, Mr. Bistro? Was it the right time to bring out this part of the God Wars Dungeon 2 or the Heart of Gilinar?
I think it was a little bit premature. Because if you take God Wars, like the original one, and you kind of factor in Telos to Nex, like how long was it between the God Wars bosses and Nex? Like there was a big window there, and it seemed like there was just a couple month window for this one. And I don't know, it seems like it was a little bit rushed. And even with Telos being like, oh, you disrupted the anima, that seems almost like an end game style boss. Like, where do you go after that?
Exactly. And
so that was just a little bit concerning on my part.
Yeah, that is where RS is at, I think. And I don't know whether we were supposed to get there at this point or not, but it is what it is. So so basically, what happens when you enter the fight? Take us a bit through the mechanics of this boss fight.
Okay. Well, if you guys haven't read my article, it came out the day we're recording this, but I'm going to pretty much almost rehash what's said in the article for you guys, talking about gear, abilities, and then the phases. But I want to start with the gear first.
Yeah, and if Dave and I have any questions, we will just interrupt you politely.
Okay. I don't want to be too long-winded on here, but I can't make any promises.
Well, I don't have a watch anymore, so...
We've done away with that after two episodes. We're just going to wing it, so...
Okay. Well, to start, I want to go right into talking about, like, actually entering it. Of course, you need to kill all the bosses from God Wars at least once. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to enter, and you'll get a free instance of Telos all to your own. And when you go down there, you're going to want to prepare with, I would say, your best combat method that you're most comfortable with. It's not as big of a deal as it would be for some other bosses, although I would highly recommend magic. And my reasons for that is because this boss, you're going to be moving around a lot. And Telos seems to really be using melee intensive, a little bit of magic, and some range. So Mage is going to give you that ability to protect from some of his magic attacks. And it's also going to be more potent against melee. So I would really recommend using magic. And for me, I went into the boss just using my port's supreme sea singer gear, and that worked fine. And I'll explain why using tank armor worked for me so well later.
Can I just say that the difference between tank armor and power armor at level 90 is on the order of only a few percentage points difference in damage?
Yeah.
So
I would say go with what you're strongest with. If you have like tier 90s for melee, then go melee. If you have tier 90s for magic, range, do that. But range is definitely the weakest of the three here. I used magic and I was pretty successful with that. I even ended up using a polypore staff and managed to get through with the success.
And that's a level 78 weapon, I believe.
Yep. I want to mention, though, that I was also using a vampirism aura. You don't want to really use a prayer aura if you're using auras here, because your prayer is really going to get drained when it comes to certain phases. And the vampirism is really going to get you some of that extra health, so you're not going to have to keep clicking on food if something really important comes around.
Right.
But I also used the arcane necklace that you get from Dungeoneering, the highest tier for that, that works almost like one of the, like an Amulet of Fury, you know, just really good, mage amulet. But yeah, the Sea Singers really work just fine there. And a polypore staff. If you have a better staff, I would recommend a better staff too. But as for food, I would definitely go for your first kill, do a higher rate or the best food that you can do and work your way down to something that you're comfortable because right. It's never going to hurt yourself to be like, oh, I didn't need this much food. And next time you go
around. Rocktail soup?
Yes, I was using rocktail soups for my kills. I did it for all my kills. I never went down to actually rocktails or sharks. I know that some people actually were actually using sharks and still being pretty successful with that. But when it comes to potions, I would recommend overloads or extremes if you have them. Combination potions also work very well here. And I would also recommend using super restores instead of like super prayer pots or stuff like that, because it's really going to just benefit you all around when it comes to using yeah. your overload as well as regaining that yeah. prayer. But that's pretty much what I have for gear here.
And in case anyone is in the market too, I would highly recommend that everybody out there go and purchase super prayer renewal potions from the Grand Exchange. They're perfect to drink and they just taste so good and they will really help you with this boss. And in doing so, you would really help drive those prices up for my Herb Lord goal. So
there you go.
There's so buy super prayer renewal potions, please.
Yeah, I knew that there was some goal in that statement there.
Brought to you in part by the Shane 120888 Herb Lore Foundation. Oh, okay. Boy.
So moving on to one other really important piece of equipment to have with you is a shield.
Oh, interesting.
And this could be
would a defender work?
No. A defender would not. And here's why. There's an ability that he uses. It's called Gilinor, Give Me Strength. And I'll go into this a little bit more in a minute or so. But when he uses this, he will charge at you from any point in the map, regardless of how far away you are, and he'll deal damage to you. But if you switch to a shield, and this is why I say it could be any shield. It could be a bronze square shield, for all I care. You switch to the shield and you use the ability Resonance and it will block all of that damage from that special attack.
I thought that ability worked with
the defender, because the main part of a defender is you're able to use your shield needing abilities with a defender, but you get that little bit of attack boost. I could be wrong.
Well, maybe you could be right. I don't use defenders, so.
Okay, well, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, and as a mage, using a staff,
yeah, that's true.
Working with the defender wouldn't really do me any good anyway.
That makes sense if you're using a staff and not dual wielding. All right.
Okay. So defenders possible. I guess I didn't really look into that one that much. But yes, that would prevent all that damage and will save you food, and that will help you in the long run. But that's pretty much all I have for gear. I want to move on to abilities. I'm really going to kind of be magic based, but because how the abilities work, it seems like each of the three combat styles have the basic abilities that go along with it. There's some really good ones to use. I would definitely recommend filling your bar up with thresholds, because the first phase specifically, thresholds will be, you'll be able to almost use them almost like basics, because you're just going to keep charging your adrenaline. But asphyxiate, it's always been really good for magic. It's still good here. Dual wielding. When it comes to ultimate abilities, I would go against Berserk. Berserk can be really dangerous, especially in the third phase. And I will also get into that later. But you don't want to use abilities that are going to make you stand in place a lot. So the magic ultimate ability like Sunshine, doesn't work very well, and that corresponds for all the other like melee and mage abilities that, or range abilities that are like that. So don't use stuff that's going to make you stand in place. Even the basic ability for range snipe probably wouldn't be very good because you're going to have to sit in place for a few seconds just to fire that ability off. So use abilities that are mobile. Make sure that your thresholds are being used at the right time. But otherwise, that's pretty much all I have for abilities. It's a pretty much vague. Make sure you have resonance. Make sure you have freedom, thresholds, and just some other basics that will fill in your bar, and you should be okay.
All right. So pretty much the same as any other core boss fight mechanic then. Don't rely too much on ultimates. Thresholds are your friend because they do a good amount of damage, and then just adrenaline build with basics.
I would say that metamorphosis for magic is really good because it allows you to stay mobile while also increasing that damage amount.
Okay.
That is a good ability for this specific boss fight.
Alrighty. Sounds good.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to the phases here, and I'm going to start with phase one. This is probably also where I'm going to explain some of his abilities and stuff because they're all, a lot of them are present here that are going to go through the second and third stage. But the first stage that you're going to get to, you're going to kind of just want to DPS him, and then you'll notice that a yellow beam is going to start shooting across the room, and it shoots across the whole, like, area in random different locations. And the interesting mechanic about Telos is that if he is standing in that beam, he's going to charge up this kind of pseudo adrenaline bar that allows him to do massive damage. So you're going to want to prevent that bar from going up all the way. And once you get done with the round, that bar will reset to zero. So your goal is to just make sure that bar doesn't go all the way up. Otherwise, you're going to be eating a little bit more food because you could be hit for a lot of damage. And I've heard that when he's enraged, this can deal over 9,000 damage, which I find a little bit hilarious.
Yeah.
So I would recommend for the first stage to stand in that bar, because what this light bar beam thing is going to do for you is it's going to give you like infinite adrenaline. So just standing in there, moving when you need to, when he does certain attacks, will make sure that you get those thresholds and even ultimates off and makes the first phase go by really fast, which can conserve that food. And you don't really have to worry about anything else on this one.
That's really just interesting for his attacks. That they would do that.
Yeah, it is. I really like the trade-offs that these beams have, and I'll cover them when I go through the other phases. But I'm going to start going with his talking about his abilities here. You already heard about the ability Gilinor Give Me Strength. When he uses that one, he will charge at you, and this is where you're going to want to do a shield switch and then use resonance to prevent all of that damage. And then that one's not such a big deal. Hold Still, it's another ability where he will kind of like jump up and like land on you. What your goal is when he says that, is to use your freedom ability so you can still move and then just kind of move out of the way. I didn't successfully actually use the ability Anticipation, which kind of allows you to prevent stuns. So I'm not entirely sure if that ability still applies when he calls that out.
See, I was thinking that you might be able to do that based on what you were saying, because Anticipate is kind of usable in that situation, but you have to wait and see.
Yeah, so I didn't manage to get that one to fire off correctly, so I'm not completely sure if that still works. I would assume that it does, because that's how that mechanic is supposed to work, but I could be wrong. It's a new boss, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to make sure all my tests are correct here. But yeah, you just have to move out of the way for that one, and I don't think you'll be taking much damage from that. His third special, he will start to charge up. He'll you have to deal 3,000 damage to him, and during that time he's going to be healing up. So it's important to use kind of a threshold. I used Asphyxiate on him at that point, which literally took maybe about 1 or 2 seconds.
Yeah, it should be about one or two ticks, maybe three in a bad case to get that with Asphyxiate, I think.
Yeah, but the sooner you can get him out of healing there, the better. And that's pretty much it for that attack. And that's the three, like, core abilities from, like, the first three phases that I've noticed.
All right. Yeah, that's a lot simpler than I was anticipating with this. And, I mean, I guess that it will get harder as you go along and increase the enrage, because you'll need to do more damage and he'll need to do more damage and just finish it off quickly. So I guess that's a trade-off there. Start easy and then work your way up.
Yeah, and that's also another thing I like about this boss, is that it almost gives you a chance to kind of learn it before it gets harder and harder. And if you didn't want it to be that way, you could just keep jumping in and out of this boss at its lowest difficulty, and you'd be just fine that way.
By jumping out, you mean doing it once a day?
Yeah,
because that's like when the
doing
enrage
it
quits.
Once a day. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. All right.
Moving on to phase two. Phase two implies that you're going to basically do the entire fight again. This time the beam is going to be black, and what this one does is it reduces your hit damage by half, and it reduces Telos's hit damage by half. So standing in this one, it's up to you. I would recommend it because it's going to keep him from raising that ability bar that I talked about before, where you will do that massive damage. This fight takes a little bit longer to do.
Because your damage is halved.
Yeah, just because your damage is halved for that. I would almost argue saying that's a little bit more relaxing because the damage isn't as much. But it does take a little bit more time and can be kind of tedious. So the faster you can get through that, I guess the better.
Does the red beam still exist in phase three?
Yes, phase two? No. At least I don't think it does. The red beam was a phase three thing.
Okay. Right. Okay, well, okay. What color was the first beam again?
Yellow.
Okay, I mean, then does the yellow beam exist in phase two?
No.
Okay, so it's a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, each of these are unique for the phase.
Alrighty.
So when you enter phase three, the red beam is different in that it will deal double damage to Telos, but Telos can deal double damage to you.
Oh, this is why, double and then basically living at your own risk then.
Yeah, and this is why I said using Berserk is dangerous, because you're already going to be taking more damage by using Berserk ability, and now factor in this
red
bar.
For anyone who isn't aware, Berserk increases your damage, but also increases the amount of damage that you do. So the question is this then additive or multiplicative? And then that kind of shows why you don't want to go in the phase three when you're doing Berserk. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, anyway, in phase three, a new ability or attack comes from Telos, where he's going to summon some minions, and these minions are going to affect his ability bar, where you want to keep his ability bar in the middle. The ability bar is going to have red on two sides of it, and if the bar goes all the way to one side or the other, he will do that attack that deals a lot of damage to you. So it's a good idea to make sure you're keeping, I'd say, one alive, because three will spawn at a time and they're pretty easy to kill. And this is also why I'd recommend mage, because you can mage them from across. You won't have to run around for that. You could stay in the beam if you needed to. And keeping one alive will really center that bar, but making sure that that one that stays alive is a new one, because as he continues to spawn them, if the one that you keep keeping alive has been around for a long time, that's going to start dealing damage.
Okay, so you kind of want to cycle them then.
Yeah, you do. So keep an eye on that.
All right. And how much? How many life points do these minions have?
I believe they have like 1,000.
Okay,
it's like
so
a
basically,
one hit thing.
Yeah,
okay, yeah right. They're almost like the shades when you're fighting QBD. I think I mentioned that in the article as well.
You did.
So it's about just taking care of those guys. It's not that big of a deal. It's just kind of one more thing that you have to pay attention to while you're actually fighting at the same time. And once you work them down, you'll move on to phase four. And phase four is the most different of all of these phases, where you will be at the bottom and there will be these three kind of symbols that you're going to have to kind of hide behind. You'll DPS him down, and then he'll start to charge himself and spawn three minions. And you want to kill these three minions that come out. And this is going to happen three times, or once for each symbol, because there's three symbols. And once these minions are dead, you're going to want to hide behind that symbol, because that symbol will create a like protective barrier from his special one-shot attack. And this is almost like that one instant kill dart that Jagex came out with a while ago.
Death touch dart, yep.
Yep. So hiding in that will protect you from that attack. And you have to do that three times, and you have to DPS him down again, and then the boss fight is pretty much over at that point.
Really?
Seems fairly straightforward, yeah.
That is surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did the kill take, if you have that information? I mean, you don't have to go into your beast thing and get the exact time, but just ballpark.
I would say 7 to 11 minutes.
Okay, well, I mean, that's you know, in some ways a good experience too, because it's almost like a little package thing that you could just do, and then do that, and then go off and do something else if you just wanted to do at once. So apparently he has 400,000 life points.
Yep, 100,000 for each phase, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, I guess that makes sense in terms of where Jagex has gone with bossing before. Everything seems to be done in phases with round amount of life points. So now, when this update was initially brought out, they said that this is RuneScape's toughest boss.
No.
Well, I mean, not to begin with, I guess, but if you wanted to keep doing it all the way up to 4,000% in rage, then perhaps.
I guess that's kind of where the caveat is. Yeah. Like, yes, but no, because, you know, I've watched countless videos on the kill, and I can say with certainty that it looks, at least, you know, Araxor is definitely like three times harder in terms of mechanics and whatnot. This is, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, as we discussed, you know, the first three phases are pretty much the same. You know, granted, there's a few adds that spawn. But yeah, I mean, it's really, even QBD has a little bit more going on than
like
this
does. Like,
you
explained that in 10 minutes. I was expecting it to take a lot longer than that. So,
well, I pride myself in that amount of time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you did a good job. So would you say that this is easier or harder than Araxor to begin with?
Easier than Araxor to begin with.
Okay. Now, we'll get to the rewards in just a moment, but obviously we end at 8,000, I mean 4,000% in rage, so you basically have 8 kills to go all the way up. So you go up 500% at a time, I believe, yeah?
I don't know if it changed from the day that I came out, but it seemed like after you would get your reward that it would go through kind of like a spin counter of the percent increase of enrage.
Okay.
So you don't get to pick. It could be like, I think it was like 5%, or it could be like 25%. So you could really get screwed.
All right. Well, that's a very interesting mechanic then, because if you think about it, if you just had a series of low rolls for that, then there's no reason to say why you couldn't kill it numerous times a day. So, all right. That makes sense. And then this also ties into the reward system. You get a reward wheel, and it shows your potential rewards. At that point, you can either take the rewards, or you can go for another spin at the boss. And you'll, of course, if you die, you won't get any of those rewards. So,
how often does the when does the enrage reset? What's the
daily?
Daily, okay.
Yep. So, I mean, I don't know how much PVM people can do every day, but if you're just thinking about doing a few bossing instances, you probably won't hit that 4,000% enrage, I don't think. So, that is in a way kind of reassuring, yet also concerning to me for a number of reasons, mainly to do with the fact that we have level 92 rewards coming out of this. And if you said that it's easier than Araxor on the first kill, then if you're not going to be going up, say, 100% each time, which I think would be a fair thing to do, then I don't know that having these rewards coming out of this boss are balanced in terms of what you get. So, right.
And another question that that I have is, does the chance of rewards increase when the enrage is increased?
Yes,
or is it okay?
It does.
All right.
It does. There's a higher chance of you getting something more rare as your enrage increases.
Gotcha.
So
I don't know if I've heard of anyone that's gotten something like super good on their first kill.
Well,
You know, I think it would probably have been probably around 48 hours after the boss came out, someone finally killed it on full enrage.
Really?
Yeah.
So I guess the thing that I saw, it was like 300 or 400%. I guess that was like the day after release. So I guess I didn't realize that somebody had already killed it on 4,000. So a little divination or invention flashback there.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, what would you give this boss out of 5 in terms of rating, Mr. Bistro, in terms of mechanics and just in general implementation?
I'd say it was a really enjoyable boss fight, and I think it has to be one of my favorite boss fights of the game. So I'd have to give it like maybe a 4.5, almost even a 5. I really liked it. I just didn't like the way that Jagex went about releasing it, because they kind of told people how to fight the boss, which is not something I remembered them ever doing in the past.
Yeah. And so, I remember when Araxor came out, everyone was struggling for, you know, at least the first week trying to pin down what to do. And we didn't even get access to the various combinations of Araxor until a few days later when the other paths opened up. Mm-hmm. So it certainly is very interesting to see what Jagex is doing with this, especially given the fact that everything that they have been doing seems so reward-based. Going back to River of Blood, Kindred Spirits, and now this, very much an emphasis on the rewards and encouraging people to go out there and play this content. I think we're almost getting to a point where we don't want something to become flavor of the week. Mm-hmm. Because of that. And I think that updates need to stand on their own. So do you think that Telos can stand on its own after the initial hype is worn down?
I don't know.
Because you'd have to factor in something like the amount of GP it costs in terms of your resources and opportunity cost, right?
Well, I don't think that's so bad, because on average, like, your first kill, if you do it successfully, could be around 500k. That's what I got on my first kill for a reward, which more than paid for the food, so I got some money back on it. And, you know, if you're doing this more often, you're going to get used to it and will be able to do it on a higher enrage, so you will be making some money. I think it will be around. I'm a little bit hesitant as to where it will actually end up, because I don't know how popular raids is even today, and that's something that has a daily limit on it, and that's not something that God Wars had or Nex had, because you can just keep going back to Nex all you want. And that's the big difference here. And I think that's why Nex has stuck around for so long and just been such a good boss.
And it's not necessarily even as hard as some of the other things out there. And you don't need to, you know, gather 20 people together like you do for Virago and whatnot. So, but of course, I don't even think we need to talk about the rewards because we talked about them already last week. the tier 92 weapons, the Zaros Godsword, Sliske's staff, and the Saren Godbow. And then, of course, the reprisal constitution ability, which I think is probably the most interesting out of the bunch, and the fact that it prevents you from taking damage and then releases the damage back out a number of seconds later. But let's just say that the amount that they are charging on the exchange for the Saren Godbow, for example, is, well, pretty high, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with it. Currently going for around 400 million on the Grand Exchange, so be interesting to see if this persists and what the economy has to say about it. But it's also worth noting that these weapons are augmentable, so these are going to be in demand for people who want to train invention at a high rate of XP with combat. So take that for what it's worth. It's also a staff rather than wands and an off wand, which might not be your kind of cup of tea, but it is what it is. So, not too much else to say on the rewards that we didn't cover from last week. I do think that, when looking at the rewards, perhaps a mistake has been made.
I think the Zamorak ability was a little bit of a cop out.
Oh, why is that?
Everything else had weapons except for the Zamorak ability.
True, true. And, I mean, I think that we are at almost a turning point in the game for the usefulness of certain skills. And we need to be looking forward to what's coming later this year with the mining and smithing rework, which was detailed a couple weeks back. Now, the mining and smithing rework is designed to give players the ability to smith and mine ore that end up you creating gear that goes all the way up to tier 90, though it won't be as effective as the tier 90s that you get from boss fighting. But the question that needs to be asked to everyone out there is, what is the point of a skill? A skill that is going to be reworked with a substantial investment from Jagex in terms of time and relating to that time, the monetary value of that. What is the point of a skill when you can go, you know, learn how to PVM, work your way up the PVM tree, and eventually, you know, just get a Zaros Godsword, for example. That's going to be level 92. Mm-hmm. We're theorizing right now that the Smith level 90 weapons will probably have an effectiveness of about tier 83 or tier 84, based on what they said. So granted, even the ports weapons are going to be better than that. So the question is that when is the PVM side of the equation going to become linked to the skilling side in order to kind of create a parody about this? Because you cannot have a game that is focused purely on endgame PVM, which, like you said, and I said I was going to draw on later, Telos, Anima, that kind of sounds like an endgame boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the point I'm trying to make is that if you are wanting to put these kind of, you know, drops in the game from a boss like this, what you ultimately need to do is you either need to make them a lot more rare, as in, you know, very rare or ultra rare, and then have, you know, a weaker version of these same weapons that, you know, would, for example, from this boss be level 85. And yes, all the other bosses would also have to have other weapons as well. So, for example, the Kalphite King's Drygors would probably, if we were following the same kind of numerical scheme here, be taken down to, you know, around level 83 or so. And then following from that, you would be able to use the mining and smithing rework to enhance something that you get from this monster, or at the very least, be able to take something that you get from this monster and attach it to, you know, one of these anima god sorts, for example, with a hilt that you get from Telos. So, I mean, that would have been a perfect way to go about this if they were wanting to bring skilling into it. And it's just kind of unfortunate that there's no skilling at all looking forward to this when it's clear right now that the mining and smithing rework is being developed. So that's just my thoughts on it. And I mean, to recap, it's really a simple idea. You smith a basic sword, this sword, or you get the sword as a drop from Telos. It would be around level 83 or level 85. Then you smith another part of it and add it onto it, and then that makes it, you know, a level 92 weapon. And you gotta have a high level smithing in order to do this. So I would just like to see some convergence of that.
Yeah, it needs to be some sort of a parallel to sort of feed off of each other for sure, in order to keep both alive and stable in the ecosystem. Yeah,
and I think that what they did with the tier 90 power armor is on the right track to that. Though there still needs to be more reason than just getting that level to, you know, create the armor. There needs to be something done from the skilling side in addition to getting a drop. So whether it's you get the main thing from the PVM or you smith the main thing and then put the additional thing on it from the PVM or vice versa, either would work in this scenario. So if I've made that clear, you guys understand?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right. So, and I mean, it's just for that reason, when I saw these drops, it's like, oh, okay, so what's going to be the point of the reworked mining and smithing skill?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, more on that later, so to speak. What do you think, Mr. Beastry? You think that's a valid concern, or are a skillers just wanting to be represented more in the PVM side of things?
I think it's a double-edged sword, because I can see the mining and smithing rework being a reason to get more into bossing.
Yeah, that could be done itself as well.
Method, but at the same time, you're still doing it to get those higher weapons and something that you can create yourself. So I'm on the fence about it. I can't say that I'm totally against it. I can see what JGX is thinking a little bit. But I'm also a little bit unnerved by the fact that there's now stuff out that's a little bit higher than what they plan to be coming out with this rework.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, the point is not that, you know, skilling and combat should be able to net the same kind of equipment. The point is just that both should need each other in some way. As in, you smith the sword and then you get something from the boss, or you get the sword drop from the boss and you create something with your smithing skill to put on it that makes it all that much better. And, I mean, with that being said, we are highly reward-based, as we saw. The rewards were last week, and I said there's no need to detail what was mentioned in the rewards because we already knew this. So, and you said you kind of already knew how to fight the thing, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I mean, it's a 4.5 out of 5, which, I mean, is not bad, so to speak, which I think means that the boss covers what it was trying to do. Because if you think about it, the only other real solo bosses we got in the game are Queen Black Dragon on the beginner's end, I would say. Or maybe the Mole, depending on how you were to do that. But I don't really count the Mole because it's free to play and...
I would say in terms of sort of the newer model of, I would say solo bosses or just bosses in general, I think that QED is definitely where it's at, as to where I guess I can kind of, I kind of split them up in a way, just in terms of how they sort of go about it. You know, you have like the new bar up top and the, you know, sort of its own environment rather than just going into a cave and killing just a you know, higher level mob, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In terms of Telos and, you know, God Wars 2, I think that QED is definitely the intro to that sort of bossing style, if you want to call it that.
But. And so you think that this kind of thing is probably interchangeable with Araxor, then it starts off easier than Araxor, then it gets much harder than Araxor as you go up and enrage.
Yeah, I think that I kind of see where they're going with it. It's a nice entry point. You know, you can't really start with something that's just initially harder than Araxor because, you know, only a percentage of the people that do Araxor are going to even want to attempt it. So you're going to have to make it accessible. And I think that is, you know, something they've done right because, yes, I do want to eventually go give this a shot because judging by the mechanics, it seems doable. But for the hardcore PVMers out there, it also provides that challenge. So again, it's kind of a double-edged sword, but it's a good double-edged sword because they're covering both ends of the spectrum. And, you know, it's kind of their way of, again, trying to pull the community and introduce them to PVM. So,
all righty then. Anything else, Mr. Bistro, on Telos before we move on?
Nope.
All right. Well, there's our look at Telos. It turns out to be a lot simpler than we were expecting, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
If you want to hear more about Telos and what Mr. Bistro thinks of Telos, you can find that at informer.rsbnb.com in his article entitled Telos. Is it really that good?
Thank you for the plug.
Not a problem. All right. So are we moving on to patch notes now, I believe. Yes, we are.
I believe so.
All right. So a number of interesting little changes this week. First up in the Gower quest, the post-quest quest lamps are now a requirement for the Master Quest Cape. Okay, I don't know who wouldn't get those, but they're there. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Also, players can now reclaim Crispy after finishing the quest. I went in there to try and find Crispy, but I wasn't able to. So I'm going to have to do a bit of looking to see where he actually reclaim Crispy from. He wasn't up at the house. I'm thinking maybe he might be in the Life Altar based on where we last saw him in the quest potentially. But that's nice, you can reclaim Crispy as an item. So they've also added a teleport to the White Hole and Pub, a.k.a. Behind the scenes to the Disc of Returning from the bank area. So you can use this after you have finished the quest to get back there easily rather than going all the way down to the Mining Guild and the Falador Mine there. Now on to some NXT fixes. Heap memory allocation reductions to decrease memory fragmentation and potentially increase performance on low-end machines. So basically what this means is that when their application runs, they have set together a pool of memory that you can call the heap. And basically what this means is that by reducing the amount of heap size that you have, it can run better on a lower end computer because if you have, you know, say for instance, 2 gig of RAM on this lower end computer and your heap is taking up a good chunk of it, then that's going to cause problems for the other processes running on your system and ultimately snake back to cause the RuneScape client to have problems as well, aka the memory fragmentation here, as in your memory is split up across various areas of your RAM, which isn't good for performance. That's just a bit of a high-level overview of what heap memory allocation pertains to for anyone out there who would be wondering. Improved performance and reduced stutter when moving around, which is always good. I've seen a bit of that, and I mean, you definitely want NX to be as fluid as you can be. And finally, items which degrade on death now correctly state this in their tooltips in the Gravestone interface. So, that's what I pulled out from the patch notes. You guys have anything else in here?
Yeah, nothing stood out to me.
Yeah, it was kind of a small week. We should probably be seeing some ninja fixes incoming next week because it has been a few weeks since we had a large dump of ninja fixes, so we'll be interested to see what comes with that. So, all right, very slim patch notes this week. Any of you guys fancy being clothing designers for Jagex?
No. Can't say that's on my bucket list.
No? All right. So it's July. And it's about that time when Christmas events start being planned, especially when they involve product. So Jagex is asking for designs on a Christmas jumper. So basically, you can create a Christmas jumper which will actually be sold on the RuneScape merchandise store if you're successful. This thing's going to look hideous, I know it.
Oh, it's going to be pretty bad.
You know, the one thing that they need to bring back to the store, and this is a personal gripe of mine, is the freaking Cabbage Bomb shirt.
I'm not aware of that one.
Oh, that was around a long time ago, and it almost seems like Jagex doesn't want to, like, want anyone to know that it was ever a thing, because I can't find it anywhere, and I want to get one. I'm almost thinking about making them myself.
Oh, yeah, that might work. So you need to meet these specifications. It needs to be a full jumper that will support up to 4 colors, no more. Your design image must be submitted by Monday, July 11th at 12:01 a.m. game time. Submissions should be sent to competitions@jagex.com, and the image files should be no larger than 2 megabytes. Alternatively, tweet the image to my RSXmas jumper hashtag on Twitter. And if you win, here's what you will be receiving. So, your Christmas jumper will be posted to you in your chosen size. It will be for sale on the RuneScape merchandise store, and you'll also receive a RuneScape goodie bag. I don't know. What would be a good thing? Maybe a black Santa hat jumper.
There you go.
Or a Santa wearing a black Santa hat.
I'm sure party hats are going to be involved somehow.
Oh, yeah, maybe, eh?
Christmas crackers, maybe?
What you could do is you could have, you know, a jumper with one of those classic 1950s-type Santa things that normally has a red Santa hat. Then you put it on with the black Santa hat, one of the scarves from the 2005 event, and then on the back you have, you know, just a general character-looking figure. Could be your character, and then that character has a party hat on. And then basically what you could do is you could design 4 colors. So basically you'd have 4 shirts, and then that would ultimately, each of those would have a different party hat. So there's a winning idea right there for anyone who wants to design
it. I'm waiting to see that on the store come November. Wait a minute.
Yeah, unfortunately I'm not too good with graphics, so we'll just have to wait and see how this goes. And I'm assuming that they can only do the front, because otherwise they would have said, okay, you also have to do the back. And I mean, I'm sure there are people who will, you know, create this shirt and then basically, if it doesn't win, create it anyways and get it for them and their friends.
Right.
So, anyways, also this week's Treasure Hunter update, it's not nearly as overpowered as some weeks, and I think it's a good thing whenever I can say that.
Yeah, well, to be fair, it's kind of just a rehashed idea, so it's always nice to see new ideas that aren't overpowered, but, you know, I'm not going to argue with it not being overpowered, but we have to remember that pull scores have been around for a while, but yeah. It's good to see that they kind of calm down a little bit.
Yeah, so. The advanced pull scores are back. Basically, you put them in your pocket slot, and you get chunk of extra fast bonus XP for whatever you're training, and then when it depletes, it will set off a pulse wave in which everyone around you will get a 2% XP boost for 10 minutes, as well as other benefits like replenished prayer or life points or stats boosted to several levels. So, should be interesting to see what kind of use we can get out of these. Oh, that reminds me, what would you use in your pocket slot at Telos, Mr. Bistro?
Pocket slot,
Vampire Zamora. Aura slot.
That's the aura slot. Yeah. For your first time around, I would just recommend the Sign of Life.
Okay. All right. And then maybe a Scrimshaw or something afterwards.
I would
or...
say a Vampirism Scrimshaw.
Okay.
To go with a Vampire Zamora, they complement each other very nicely.
What about the Bloody Essences from River of Blood?
Have not used those yet.
Yeah. They seem kind of like poor man scrimshaws, maybe, or maybe even a god book might be interesting.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Vampirism Scrimshaw only works with melee, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So keep in mind, if you are going to mage, do not get a scrimshaw of Vampirism, because it will be wasted. So.
All right. Well, that's pretty much it for RS updates this week, but before we go, there was the developer blog for animating spirit dragons, which are coming with the Ark. So they got some samples here of what the animated spirit dragons will look like in the Ark. So you can, of course, see this on the news posting here. They look kind of like sea dragons, I guess. So And I assume that's where they will be because the Ark does definitely have a lot of water surrounding in it. So,
yeah.
Basically, they go through the entire animation process from the very beginning all the way to the end, and outlining how the dragons actually work and showing some interesting little phases here of what it looks like when you animate one part of the body and not the other part. So if you're at all interested in how your RuneScape objects are animated, definitely give this a look. Nice dev blog by Mod Hing. Alrighty, well, that's it for RS updates this week. You guys ready to move on to questions?
Indeed, let's do it.
Okie dokie. So, this first one is from Thieves. Hey guys, long time no question, but here we go. I'm pretty excited about the looming skill pet updates, so which skill pet would you like to obtain first? Number two, what animal, creature, or being would you like it to be? No Vulcan bobbleheads allowed, Shane. Three, if they weren't just cosmetic, what ability would you like them to have? Not RS related, but who, if anyone, are you rooting for in the football year 2016? Come on, Wales, a.k.a. Tyrannan. And that's from Thieves, who says, cheers, fellas. Okay, I think my answer is obvious for this one. So, Mr. Bistro first. What skill pet will you obtain first?
I wish I could have an answer for this, but I am so against pets, and I didn't want this to come to light, but I guess I just have to say it. I don't want to obtain any pets, regardless of what benefits they give.
All right, that's fair. And I think I would be in a similar boat to that. But I do definitely... I'll let Dave go first, because we know where this is going.
I would have to say it's going to probably be between a couple of my favorite skills. Divination, runecrafting, or construction. It's really hard to pick because I'll probably be going for as many as I can just for something to do. Now, as far as what animal creature, divination, I think it's pretty obvious. It'd probably be some sort of a light creature, maybe like a bigger wisp, perhaps. Rune crafting, I'm not really sure since we kind of already have the Rune Guardian. It'd be interesting to see how they do that, but I'm not really sure for that. And construction? That's also something different.
Animated plank.
You know, I wouldn't put it past them. But as far as, you know, if they weren't just cosmetic, you know, what they could actually do, you got to be really careful with this because you don't want it to be, you know, super overpowered or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying.
Games break with power creep.
That's true. And, There's something, and I don't want to give it more attention than it deserves, but on old school, the skill capes give a little bit of a boost, sort of a little bit of an advantage to the skill when it activated. It should just give you a level. It has a little bit of a buff. I think something similar to that would be nice. You know, obviously, I haven't really put too much thought into it, but I think it would be similar to that. I think, gosh, I'm trying to think of stuff off the top of my head. Maybe something with rune crafting, it, you know, increases your rune yield maybe by 5% or something.
Yeah,
something
that could work.
You know, and divination, same thing. You know, increased energy stuff, maybe borrow a little bit of the abilities from the familiars, but you don't want to, you know, sort of
break that. Yeah, so you don't want to kill things and cause stuff to overlap.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, if there were any sort of... you know, stat buffs, I think it would have to be minimal, but just, you know, sort of a quality of life. Oh, it's nice that I have it, but it's not something that you actively need to search out. But right. I would say those are my three that I'll probably search for first, is divination, runecrafting, and construction for sure. So,
okie dokie. As for me, it would definitely be farming followed by herblore. Farming is obvious. Herblore is also obvious as they're my second ones. So there's those two. Now... animals and creatures that it should be. I have no idea for this, hence why I suggested the animated plank for Dave's construction pet. I don't know. I would suggest, you know, maybe a mound of compost for the farming one, but we already have that in the summoning familiar, unfortunately. Though that might be kind of disgusting. So, and we already have a walking tree and the ant and I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to extrapolate those things. But for the Herb Lore ones, there's no reason why you couldn't, you know, have, you know, like a vial that comes to life and follows you around and changes color, kind of like the one in the cape does. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in the farming one, a farming patch falling behind you that rains and then gradually comes to life. So those are two ideas right there.
Maybe a hopping herb bush? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, but it needs to encompass the entire skill. And yeah, that goes true. With where I'm going if they weren't just cosmetic. And, you know, this is what I was really hoping for, that they would come next year and tie into the prestige system, because I think players would jump up and down for this, is that if you had pets and you can just level up your skilling pets and get them to have some other benefit, then that might be an interesting thing. And, you know, like you, Mr. Beaster, I don't like pets either, but if they're going to come, I really wish that they would have some benefit to them that people would have to level up over time. So if they weren't cosmetic, it's a really simple ask. A really simple ask for farming. Decrease the chance of disease and ultimately death for any crop based on your farming level. Because right now we don't have that, and it's just really disheartening when at level 120 farming, I have a herb patch where 3 out of 6 are dead.
Well, the question is, why don't they just put that into the skill?
Exactly, right?
That would make too much sense.
I mean, when it was suggested that Prestige ought to have a way of rewarding players, I thought, okay, that's fine for a perfect passive. And prior to that, I was thinking, okay, let's do this with the Farming Guild. But obviously, we're not going that direction. So, Herb Lore 1, I'm not sure about the secondary idea, maybe something like the ability to create 4-dose potions without needing to use a magic well from Treasure Hunter. I think that would be good to have that in the game without needing to rely on Treasure Hunter for that. So, that's that. And no, I don't follow Football Thieves. Sorry about that. It's not very popular here.
Yeah, I don't either.
So, and he means real football here, as in what the Americans call soccer, with a round ball, because you actually kick it. Therefore, it should be known as football.
Correct.
Whereas the one that you guys play with an egg-shaped ball, I don't know what you ought to call that.
Mm. I am not a fan of it, so.
Yeah, same.
I try not to call it anything.
How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I think it should be called, I don't know, some mixture between rugby and, I don't know, football.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we don't like that sport, so you just cheer for your soccer thieves. That's a good thing to do. All right, especially Wales. And see, that's why I thought you were Irish, because Wales is near Ireland, except there's a bit of water between them. That's why I thought you were Irish thieves, because you mentioned Wales before. I'm sorry, I'm just talking to our listeners. If you send questions in, I'll use this as a way to talk to you, so feel free to do that. Alrighty, Dave, you want to take the next one from the RR man?
I will. Alright. Hey, I'm back. Question for this week. I need to get a new graphics card. Should I wait for the new GTX 1070 to drop in price, wait for the 1060, or try something new and get an AMD card? The 480 looks good. Also, last week, one of my favorite shows ended, Person of Interest, a fantastic show which dealt with a post-9/11 world with all the NSA and surveillance stuff. Not only do I think Shane should give it a go, I think everyone should. If only for the fact that it's the last ep. No, if only for the fact that its last episode was the best series wrap-up I've ever seen. Too many shows these days are canceled without proper ends. Cheers, the RR Man.
Ah, yeah, you're kind of referring to Continuum there, aren't you, Mr. RR Man? graphics cards, okay. You guys in the market for any new graphics cards here?
Yes, but not for the reasons, not for traditional reasons, right. But I'll go into that a little bit later. So.
How about you, Mr. Bistro?
No, I just got my new PC a couple months ago, so I'm pretty happy with everything.
I would say that you should probably wait for the 1070 to drop in price if that's what you want to do, because you need to look at the final two numbers in that series. You got 1060, 1070, and 1080. Now, the the 60 lines, so 1060, 960, 860, 760, going all the way back, are effectively known as the budget prosumer cards, whereas the 70s, 670, 770, 970, and 1070 are going to be known as the prosumer cards, whereas 1080, 980, and so on down the line are known as the high-end cards. So I would say definitely focus on the 1070 if you want to go for NVIDIA. That's also worth noting that the 480 you mentioned, the AMD 480, is a budget graphics card. So you might want to look at benchmarks before you also look into that. Though AMD has said that if you strap two R9 480Xs together in Crossfire, you can get performance on the level of an NVIDIA 1080. So that's what they said. We haven't seen benchmarks yet, but always be skeptical when it comes to Crossfiring. So I would say either go for the 1070 or see if the benchmarks are good enough on the 480, and if not, look for, of course, the upline of the 480, because there will, of course, be an upline, because the 480 is the budget. So it'll likely be the 490 or the 480X, I want to say, will be the advanced version that AMD offers. So I would say come down to one of those three, the 1070, the 480, or the one up from the 480, depending on where the benchmarks go for that. Mm-hmm. In terms of favorite TV shows, I will definitely give that a look. I've seen it advertised on the TV here, but I've never really looked into it. So it might be interesting to see what they did with it, because the last show that kind of centered around surveillance and stuff like that was 24, which everyone knows ran for about 9 seasons. So that was a good show. So I will definitely give that a look. So thank you, Mr. RR Man, for that question. You guys have any TV shows that you were watching that ever got canceled?
Not necessarily. I really don't watch too much TV, honestly.
As for canceled, no. But I also followed Person of Interest. I kind of dropped off once I moved out of my parents' house and I didn't have TV anymore. But that was a good series. And if you like that, I would also recommend 24, because the season finale or series finale for 24 was just perfectly done.
The first series finale or the second series finale?
The first series finale.
Okay.
But yeah, it's good if it comes back.
They came back for an encore.
Yeah. And then I would also recommend, I think it's, I don't remember what station it's on, but I think it's called Mr. Robot. And
it's on HBO?
I think it's on HBO, but it's really, really good. It's all about kind of like hacking and stuff, but it's not like that stupid Black Cat movie that came out a while ago.
I see what you mean by calling it stupid.
it's good.
Yeah, you know, I can attest to that. I saw the preview of that when they showed the pilot, and it looked pretty good, though it didn't really catch my interest. So I will second that if those kind of things are your thing, dramas and whatnot, that center around something that might not be typical, then probably Mr. Robot, something you should look at, though I did only see the preview of it when they showed it, so. All right, that sounds good. It's interesting that all these things are kind of linked together like that. So, very neat. All righty. So, the last question is from Wiley. You want to give that a read for us, Mr. Bistro?
Sure. Hey, guys. Wiley here. Do you think RuneScape will ever move away from the grid system and tick system currently in place and become a free location, free speed MMO like other common games where you can auto as fast as you click or animations can happen, chug variety of potions or eat inventory of cabbages between abilities and attacks. Thanks for your time.
I think that the tick system being changed is a far ways away. because it would interfere with so many things related to time in the game, because that's what they base their timing on. Farming is based on that, for example. The time it takes between actions in-game to, you know, limit how fast your auto interface makes your herbal or potions and whatnot is all linked to that. So it is technically possible for them to do that. They said they could look into that for 2017, because that was actually on the survey. So they said they weren't going to put it on the content survey, but they hear you and they are looking at doing some kind of project like that. So there is hope for that. And I think that in itself would almost be a bigger update than any combat update we've seen in the past, just for the amount of change it would bring to the whole combat system. It'd be a lot more fluid, and like he says, you'd be able to basically do whatever you want with the combat system without being forced to wait, which for me is one of the biggest complaints of combat, that there is an RS. So I don't know how you guys feel about the tick rate.
Yeah, short answer, will it ever happen? No. Long answer, obviously it's a possibility. My personal opinion, it's going to have a much bigger and possibly worse backlash than EOC in terms of people quitting and being butthurt.
Yeah, because people don't know what they want. Like, this will make everything harder.
And if that happens, then ultimately what we're going to see is we're going to see a third fragment of the community, because we're going to have old school, we're going to have EOC, and then we're going to have current game, which is on the free, no tick system. And at that point, you have to ask yourself, if you haven't put that much time into the game, why, at that point, why would you play RuneScape over World of Warcraft or Guild Wars or Rift or anything like that? Because at that point, basically what makes one of the biggest unique things about RuneScape is the tick system and just sort of the ease of gameplay. It's very simple. It's point and click. It's straightforward. Not necessarily heavy on the keybinds and the controls and whatnot. So like I said, short answer is no. If they're smart, they won't do it, because again, it's going to fragment the community even more. And just when we've kind of rebuilt our, people coming back to EOC, I think it would be a horrible move for them to go ahead and just completely sort of redesign what RuneScape is all about in terms of, the framework and whatnot. So I'm very much against it. If people want to play something like that, again, there are plenty of other, pretty much every other MMO out there works on that sort of, movement system. So I would just highly recommend that rather than sort of lobbying to change RuneScape, because I think that is in the game's worst interest at this point. So,
all right, fair enough. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Well, I don't know if there's a way that they could update it without removing it. Doubling up the amount of ticks it can actually take. That way, everything that happens in game
doing it
can be in place. But there's still a tick system. It's just less noticeable because there's just so much
like
more ticks.
We're never going to go to somewhere like 60-odd ticks per second like you have, for example, in Counter-Strike or other games. I don't think we're ever going to get there, just because it would require, a complete rewrite of the game engine. I think what you said is more likely, where they could, at least double it or maybe triple it. But even then, you're going to get lots of unintended side effects there.
Mm-hmm.
So, buyer beware. And then a free square moving system. They actually looked at this with NXT, believe it or not. NXT and the previous Java clients did actually have support for game controllers, believe it or not. So right now you can plug a game controller into your computer, activate the Orb of Oculus, and then you can control the Orb of Oculus with an Xbox controller. Not many people know that. It was in a patch note a few months ago. But it's there. So obviously the driver support is there. It's just a question of, how can we do this with the game? And, the square system on the ground is once again those legacy RS classic features that makes RuneScape what it is. And sure, you could remove those, especially now with the NXT client. But at the same time, they found that the way the game is designed, the way that the objects are so small, it would be too hard to, for example, line up to, a one square banking chest as a prime example, or a one square thing on the ground that you want to pick up, because you got to get there and then you got to figure out how to pick it up. Whereas mm-hmm. now all you do is you just run to it or run next to it, click on it, and then voila, you've picked it up. So,
right, and same with, you know, say rocks on there, because basically the collision lines are basically just on every square that it's on. You obviously can't walk on it, but if they had the free moving, you know, no tick or no grid, then they're going to have to, you know, very much so redefine every object in the game to have more precise collision lines, and therefore you're probably going to have a higher poly count. And it's, I mean, it's not just necessarily, you know, just removing something. There's a lot more that has to go into it in terms of graphics.
You really need to do collision counting. You're right.
Yeah, you really have to pretty much just rewrite the whole game engine and then go from the ground up.
Which, when you think about it, just look at Shadows in game. Shadows mm-hmm. are built based on using a non-textured render at a skewed aspect ratio to show where that shadow is going to come. And that's done on your video card at a much lower resolution than the actual object itself. So you would be, once again, adding another layer onto the compute side of things in terms of collision prevention, which, I mean, you could do and is possible probably with this client, and they said they prototyped it, but it just didn't feel like RS. And coming back to what makes RS RS based on the tick rate and whatnot, and then this square by square walking system, it's just, that's what we've known for so long. And there's a really beautiful way of looking at this programmatically, is that if you have, you know, a grid-based layout and you want to have certain grids that you can't walk in, well, you just mark them as non-walkable. Then all you do is you use the shortest pathfinding algorithm from point A to point B, and then you can even weight those if you wanted to, and then just find the shortest way to get there. And that's what the game does right now. And it's a really simple thing to do in software. So, once again, goes back to legacy RS and just keeps it what it is. But, I mean, we could explain more about how this pathfinding works, but I think we've already had enough computer science concepts with the heap already today.
There we go.
All righty. Well, that's it for questions. So thank you, everyone, for sending those in. If you want to be like these individuals, just email them to questions@rsbnb.com. We take text and audio questions there. You could even send us a video, too, if you want, I guess. And then I'd play it on the screen and then go up on the video version of YouTube. Or you can call or text to 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, if you just have a text question, you don't want to use email, or you don't want to sign up on the forums, just direct message them to us at RSBNB on Twitter. All right. So, tech news. Windows 10's anniversary is coming up at the end of July. So, it's been 1 year since we've had this thing known as Windows 10, and I think it's performed remarkably well, not only from a usability standpoint, but also a security standpoint. Nothing major that broken compared to other releases, so that's always good. But as of the end of May, Windows 10 is on 350 million devices, which is excellent, and coming July 29th, there will be what they're calling Windows Redstone 1, which is essentially the anniversary update, which is the yearly update for Windows 10. No real fanfare, and it's going to be provided to everyone for free who has Windows 10 already. And then following that a few days later, everywhere else will get the Windows 10 update, including tablets, Windows phones, Surfaces, Xbox One, Internet Things devices, and, of course, HoloLens, and that's on August 2nd. So, Microsoft going down real hard on their Windows 10 strategy, enabling people to download it for free and take part in this Windows as a service ecosystem. So,
now I have a little observation here. I'm sure I'm not the first one to catch it, but Redstone 1, are they making Minecraft references now that they bought them out?
That could very well be the case, though I don't have experience with Minecraft to definitively say yes or no.
Okay, well, Minecraft is pretty much just a type of ore that you can mine, and ironically enough, it is basically the conductor material to make circuits and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Well, so then that would make sense.
I think they have a software called Redstone.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. Never mind then.
Okay. And you guys are both on Windows 10. And, you know, once again, I'm just going to say, if you haven't upgraded to Windows 10, you have, well, just under 4 weeks to do it now. And it is essentially Windows 7 combined with Windows 8. And what you're getting when you update is you're getting a ticket into Microsoft's ecosystem for the next decade or so, probably. And you're going to be able to basically have a linkage between all of the Microsoft products that exist, including Xbox, you know, HoloLens, any Internet of Things stuff, maybe even a Microsoft wearable at some point. They'll all be linked together by the Windows 10 experience. And for those of you guys who already do have an Xbox, you know how great this is. So you definitely should update. And if you don't have any of these things, the reason that you should upgrade to Windows 10 is that you're ultimately just going to be upgrading to the next version of your operating system. It's not necessarily that you're gaining anything. It's just that you are doing yourself a service by ensuring you have the latest software on your system to make sure you're going to be up to date. And who knows, in a year or so, they could change Windows 10 a little bit so that it's less easier to get into than it is right now. Because I think if you enjoy Windows 7 right now, you'll enjoy Windows 10. So definitely give it an update. All the issues are ironed out, and there's no real concerns to be had with this. So it really is the ecosystem that you're looking for. And once again, if you need reasons to update to Windows 10, I have a piece on Informer called 10 Reasons for Windows 10. So definitely give that a read if you're looking for reasons to get Windows 10. And I don't see why people don't, except for, I mean, following bad FUD that's been spread around the internet from the very beginning. So, I don't know. I mean, it's really quite simple. The upgrade is free. Windows 10 brings a modern operating system to Windows users, which has been lacking with 7 and 8. It will be the last Windows update that's hard to install. The update will be painless, hence what I said. You're going to install it once, and then after that, you're free to go. It's going to be stable. It's got the same kernel as Windows 8 and Windows 7. It's the unified Microsoft platform. Microsoft has made development tools freely available if you like to tinker. The interface is the best that Microsoft's ever built, even some changes to Explorer in there. Game streaming from your Xbox if you have that, and a browser that is really great if you prefer not to use Google Chrome or Firefox. You can finally use a decent browser on Windows 10. So, would highly recommend Windows 10 if you haven't done that yet. Alrighty. Anything else on Windows 10? You guys enjoying it?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Excellent.
And I believe the final chance to upgrade for free is coming up pretty quick.
Yep, the 29th of July. And after that, it goes up in price. And, I mean, I have this internal debate with myself every time I hear someone say, oh, I haven't upgraded to Windows 10. I say, why? Oh, I just don't need to. There's nothing there for me. And I mean, Microsoft is king of those kind of updates because they're the legacy company and that they don't want to disrupt enterprise users, which is fine. But when it comes down to it, there's no one, you're really hurting yourself by not doing this, because at some point those updates are, security updates are going to stop coming to Windows 7. And I really wish that for, you know, home operating systems and whatnot, that Microsoft employed a similar mechanism to what Apple does on the iPhone, where you can't get security updates for the old versions of iOS, and you can't install old versions of iOS because they're not signed. And Microsoft could certainly do that for PCs that were running Windows 8 and Windows 7 sold to the home consumer market. It would have been, made the update to Windows 10 a lot easier. So, anyways. Alrighty. Next piece of tech news relates to a patent filing by Apple that would allow the iPhone to not record video at concerts if an IR signal was detected. So the idea behind this is that you're at a concert, and then the concert stage will emit an IR beam, then your iPhone will detect this and ultimately say, oh, we can't record because of this IR here. So it will say recording disabled. And of course, this is of course brought up by various artists, including Adele. She said that there were over 1,000 iPhones trying to film her concert at the last one she was at a few weeks ago. So what do you guys think of this? I mean, IR using to disable a camera phone.
Short answer, I think it's a little too much control. I understand that, you know, especially now with Spotify, and I know musicians are really fighting for their legal rights and whatnot.
Yep.
You know, I think it's going a little too far disabling people's phones at this point. And, you know, if it does go through, I'm going to predict that we're going to see a lot more jailbroken phones, or we're going to see a lot more people moving away from iPhone, because I think people are, I wouldn't say paranoid or upset, but, you know, they've kind of, I don't know. I think that people are a little skeptical now about the whole Apple thing and getting into people's phones with the whole San Bernardino or whatever. I don't know. Personally, just right off the bat without doing much research, I think it's a little too much control being able to, you know, disable phones at yeah. certain points. There comes a point where the, you know, DMCA or whatever you want to call it is, you know, kind of being a little too much Big Brother-ish. In terms of letting you do stuff with your device, you know, again, I can see both ends, but I think, I don't know, it's probably not in their best interest to start disabling phones, you know, at concerts. Because, I mean, even if it's because most people that record at, you know, venues or whatever, they're not making money off of it. It's usually either like a Snapchat video, or it's just something to have as a you know, memory thing. YouTube already has something in place. If it's, you know, obviously if it's copyrighted, you can't monetize the video. So I really don't see how they're losing money off of it. I would think they would be kind of getting free advertising, because, you know, if they're posting their video, oh,
that's
hey,
what it is.
I went to see such and such. Here's a clip of my favorite song. Like, oh yeah, that's cool. That was a good performance. You know, they're not uploading this poorly recorded, you know, obviously very distorted, you know, sound file or video, and they're not, you know, selling it for a profit. It's mostly just the free advertising, and I think they're I think the music industry is getting way too uptight about with rights and stuff. So yeah, I really do not like this this concept, and I hope it doesn't go through, because that's it's a little too much power in their hands.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously just a patent application that kind of basically says, okay, we could do this. And for anyone wondering how this would work, is you would have an emitter or two or three up at the stage, and then if you point the phone at that emitter, it would detect that signal and then disable the recording. And you do this by putting the IR detector inside the camera. So if you try and cover up the IR detector, you ultimately cover up your camera.
Yeah.
So it is kind of like draconian, like you say, but I mean, a patent is a patent, and if someone wants to implement that and put it in a device, they're free to do that. And I think people would still buy the iPhone regardless of whether or not that was in there or not.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. My personal opinion, I think iPhone sales would drop, because you have a lot of bloggers, you have a lot of sort of the artsier, I don't want to call it artsier crowd, I don't want to label it, but I think you have a lot more of the artsier crowd. You have the people, the bloggers, they're going to go to the music festivals, they're going to want to document stuff. And I honestly, I really think that you're going to see a lot more people switching to an alternate, you know, mobile platform rather than iPhone. If iPhone really starts restricting on what can be, you know, photographed and what can be, you know, recorded, and I don't know, I'm against it. So moving
all right. On. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I think this is actually really dangerous. And I also think that would really impact sales, because the fact that people can't record something when they want to would turn people off right away. But I'm not just thinking about concerts. Like, what if people just started using this in their day-to-day life?
Yeah. Like, and see, the thing is that you can get an IR receiver, and then you can determine the pulse modulation of that IR beam, and then you can duplicate that with just any, you know, generic IR transmitter.
Yeah, and then the, you know, this can also get out of hand really quick. And, you know, they're obviously going to put these in movie theaters. They're going to put these in art museums. They're going to put these in all kinds of different things. And it's going to come to the point where the only place you can take a picture is in your own house. And what's the point of having a camera at that point? You know what I mean? So I think this can get out of control really quick, just pretty much because, again, money talks. All they have to do is request permission and just get these IR things. And it's really dangerous because then it's going to come down to you know, we're going to get to the point where they're going to start disabling, you know, and I understand it's in the best interest of the party trying to implement it, but this just goes down the line as, okay, are we going to start having phones that are disabled when you're driving a car and stuff? And it's just like, it's a little too much. I mean, there comes a point where, you know, you have to be responsible yourself. You know, we don't need to have these things that really are pretty much in our generation. They are your livelihood. They have all your info on it. You know, it's your main way of communication, and to have, you know, third party sort of control that by any means really is definitely dangerous. So.
Alrighty. Well, I got something else for our next piece of tech news that's dangerous. Alrighty. So it's no secret out there that a good number of people use this thing called Facebook Messenger. So, okay. There is a security vulnerability with Facebook Messenger that Facebook says is a design feature. So I'm going to take you guys through this. So you send a link into Facebook Messenger and your friend clicks on it. And when they click on it, it sends a signal to Facebook where Facebook goes out and fetches the title, description, and thumbnail of that link, and then stores it in a database with a link identification number, so a standard ID number. And now, okay, that seems like fairly innocuous, right? If we're just trying to catalog a link. But Facebook has a public API that can be accessed with any Facebook developer account or any Facebook user account. So, for example, they give is that in this object database, Mark Zuckerberg's ID is ID number 4, and it says the name behind it. So what you can do is you can move through each of these developer ID numbers that access data from Facebook's Graph API, and then they return data if you are able to access it. So, for example, most of the time you will receive a prompt saying that you're not allowed to access it or it just doesn't exist. But in the off chance you do enter an ID number that is valid and something that is public, like a URL that they class as a website, you will get some information about this. So granted, you can see the created time and what it is, but then if you expand out further and access Facebook's URL retrieving part of the Graph API, you can get the full URL that was sent via Facebook Messenger or anywhere else on Facebook for that matter, which, I mean, is fine on a public website, but if you're sending it through Facebook Messenger, no, you probably don't want your links you send on Facebook Messenger being shared out to the wider developer API, Graph API. So the person who discovered this did a test, created a Google Drive document, and sent it to someone on Facebook and then clicked it. And then they were able to retrieve the identification number for that URL and find out what the URL was without actually opening the messaging conversation. So the moral of the story here is that if you send, you know, a friend of yours, say, a photograph of you and someone that you're attached to that you might not want getting out publicly, well, someone could just scrape the entire API, find these URLs, and ultimately access whatever you sent your friend. Though it won't be attributed to you, someone will be able to see that it was sent on Facebook at some point in the future. And this can actually be reproduced with other people's private links, and lo and behold, it actually works. So this was reported to Facebook a number of times before this article was written, and a lot of information comes from it, like, for example, names of people who have clicked on them, the location or language, the attachment images, the application it was sent from, and ultimately the ID numbers. So when this was reported to Facebook a number of weeks ago at the beginning, or rather the end of May, it went through the entire bug process. And then a couple of days ago, it was posted that, oh, this is intentional behavior. So, well, it's looking as though Facebook is okay with this, and it seems like something that you don't want to get out there. It's just part of what you're signing up for when you are using Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, not to get too secure heavy, but it sounds like they're not handling their data very well on their API. And we're throwing API around a lot, so if anyone doesn't know what API is, the best way to like kind of describe that is, like, for a computer, it's like if you were to put some information into a vending machine, like C4, and then it gives you something back, that's basically what an API is doing. And the fact that you can just get this information from the API means that they're not sanitizing or protecting their data very correctly.
Yeah. And
intentional behavior or not, I mean, yes, if they signed up for it, I suppose it's okay, but it's still something that I would be worried
about.
And
the URLs aren't specifically identified to you or the messages that they were sent, the context that they were sent. It's just that they are there.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that being said, I would basically say to anyone out there who uses Facebook Messenger that if you're chatting with someone and you want to send someone a link to a supposedly, say, unlisted YouTube video or a family photo album, you should probably send it on a different platform. And this means Facebook Messenger, Facebook Messages, private Facebook groups, Facebook pages, you name it, it's all in there. So, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I am happy that I don't use that as a messaging platform. Oh, boy. Thankfully, there's no API for iMessage. But
APIs aren't inherently evil either.
Yeah, they
are. Like the no, they're not.
They just I said they aren't.
Okay.
Yeah, they are not. They just need to be built properly.
Yeah.
Anyways, skill of the month update for June, the crafting skill of the month. Parnassius still in first place with 5.7 million XP gained. A truly remarkable feat. And in second place, we have N That's Bad with 2.5. And in third place is Poison Nova with 2 million XP. So, very neat. If you look at this, Parnassius actually told me that all of this experience he gained has been by way of gathering his own materials and not spending a single GP on crafting.
Wow.
And he came in first.
That's impressive.
So that just shows what crafting would be capable of if you actually did want to spend GP on it. So the fact that you're not spending GP on it just shows how efficient you can be if you look for efficiencies in the RuneScape skilling system. So Parnassius has pretty much won this, as it's the end of the month. And with that being said, it's worth noting that by the time you are listening to this, the July skill of the month, which is Invention, will have started. Which I believe...
Divination.
Oh, sorry, Divination. I always get those two confused.
Yeah, me too.
Which you two are both competing in.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting those 7 minutes. It's going to happen.
Is it that time or is it an hour from now? I'm not sure. I'm not sure which way we're set up. But you'll get an email when it's time. Everyone gets an email when it's time. I honestly have no idea what time our server is set on anymore. I lost track of that years ago. So,
okay.
Yeah, but it works, right?
It does, and that's all that matters.
Okay, so we got to good amount of achievements of the week. So let's alternate through these. First up, Dave, you got, sorry, not Dave. Oh, I was reading your cursor. Eon got 120 invention on the 29th of June.
Sirion got 99 prayer on June 28th.
And then Bolter 99 got 99 construction on the 27th.
Boredom got 99 invention on June 27th.
Interesting
I
name.
I like that name.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah. And then Tim got 99 slayer, 99 ranged on the 26th.
Jumandy 52, 99 invention on June 26th.
And then finally, Alex 43 got three of them on the 25th, and that would be 99 divination, runecrafting, and hunter.
What a day.
So, nice three of them there, and good job.
He knocks them out in chunks.
Yeah. And, I mean, it seems as though what we're seeing on here is that we're seeing less cookings and fletchings than we used to, and more of the other skills, which I guess is good
because they're all done.
Or it could be that. Could be that.
It's nice to see invention really making its appearance every week. Everybody's sort of getting into that, so it's nice to see everybody kind of coming back up to par with the, I guess the, I don't know what I want to call it, the
invention grind.
Invention grind, development of the skill, kind of, you know, blossoming out. More people are getting into it, so I like to see that. So
yeah, it is very nice indeed. Oh, alrighty, though we like any achievement. I do have a pick of the week this week, and you know, I was thinking because I was asked earlier in the week, what headset should I get? And it occurred to me that we had never used my gaming headset as a pick of the week. So that's what this week's pick of the week is going to be. And that is the Amazon, or rather the Turtle Beach PX21, which you can get from Amazon.com. It is a pretty good, I'd actually say very good, all-round gaming headset for the price. You guys know how much this is?
I know I have a pair, and it's probably cheaper than it was when I bought it, like, 3 years ago.
Yeah, only $44.99 on Amazon now. And this is a standard stereo gaming headset. It works with the Xbox. It works with the PlayStation 3 and 4. It works with the PC. So it pretty much works with any platform that you have. Mm-hmm. And then excellent sound, comfortable, independent volume controls as well for chat and gaming. So that means that you plug one end into your green output on the back or your optical output, and then the other end gets plugged into your USB output on the front of your computer. So then you have one control that controls your Skype or Discord volume and another control that controls your gaming volume. So it basically lets you have independent controls. If you want one to be louder or one to be quieter, you can do that. And then there's another thing that happens with this. You can purchase for, I believe it's another $59.95 if you want, the Turtle Beach digital signal processor, which enables the headset to support virtual surround sound. So for about $100, you can get a virtual surround sound headset if you wanted to do that. But what we're talking about today is just the standard stereo headset, the Air Force PX21 for $44.99, and pretty good headset. And it's also good for podcasting. That is actually what Earth has used to do the show for last year and the few episodes that he's been on this year. So very good in terms of microphone quality too, which we like for the podcast. And if you're on Skype or in TeamSpeak or Discord, it also ensures that it reduces background noises appropriately, so you can speak without having to worry about, you know, whether there's something going on in the background and it's going to get picked up. So a very good headset for a very good price. So that's the PS3 Air Force PX21 headset available on Amazon.com.
I can attest to that too, because I'm running on the PX22 MLG. I bring that home from work just for the podcast. So pretty basically the same headset.
And yeah, I think there was really a difference great. That caused me to recommend the PX21 over the PX22. Do you have independent volume controls on there?
I do.
All right. And you have a USB and a 3.5 millimeter, right?
Yep, they're both plugged into the front.
Okay, so, all right. Well, I mean, you could get the PX22, but I think that the PX21 is an excellent price for what you get.
Yeah, I think the PX21 is probably going to be a better price. I don't know what the 22 is for cost, but I think the 21, based on your sound quality, is pretty superb. So
yeah, and it's, of course, on Amazon, which I think everyone in the world has access to. So, I mean, even though it's discontinued at Turtle Beach, lots of retailers still sell these. So definitely, if you need a new headset this year, this is the one to pick up. Okay, so what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Mr. Bistro.
Just a whole lot of work. I'm also putting a couple other companies' websites live on my free time and been doing bossing and dungeoneering to kind of get myself to 120 because I never did that. So now with Divination coming around, I'll be definitely digging into that for Skill of the Month.
Alrighty, how about you, Dave?
Yep, just the standard stuff, catching up with my comp requirements, actually getting into a little bit more divination, collecting some energy for the skill of the month. Hopefully I'll be able to make a little bit of a dent in there. I really haven't made much of an appearance since I won back in March, but hopefully I can do a little damage this month. But yeah, that's pretty much it, just kind of chipping away at some stuff for comp. I'm going to have to go to Telos hopefully within the next week and knock that out. But yeah, that's pretty much it. That and work is pretty much what I'm doing. So,
alrighty. Well, as for me on RS, just been working on the Herb Lore stuff. So, and as I said, I would highly recommend those Super Prayer Renewal combination potions for Telos. I would highly recommend them. Get all your friends to buy them, please.
Absolutely,
please.
Yeah.
Please.
It's a referral discount, right?
It's a great deal. In the Grand Exchange. Make it happen, folks. Make it happen. Oh, yeah. But in addition to Herb Lore, just herb farming, and actually started up the sinkholes again because I was told that if I get level 95 dungeoneering and get access to the resource dungeon in Prif, I can access the daily card for dungeoneering. And then there's one of them that if I get that card, I can get a free potion recipe without having to hunt around various dungeons for that. And
lazy.
Well, yeah, I'm not much for dungeoneering, and I'm looking for the Extreme War Masters potion, which basically combines all the extreme potions and is one of the few sellable combination potions on the exchange, and is actually the one I would like to use doing Herb Lore. So,
gotcha.
Because the way I figure that out, I can get the most XP because I start with the base super potions, make them extreme, then I put them into the crystal flasks, and then I can sell them off. So it's less hard on the bank account that way.
There you go.
So that's the way I plan on doing that. But that's about it. Dave, we'll be back next week. I know we're at the end of the quarter, but we're holding him over for 1 week because we do have some announcements to make next week about the course of events in July, but after that we will be unveiling our new co-host at the end of the month, so stay tuned for more information next week on what's happening and of course whatever's going to be happening in RS for July. So that's pretty much it. So thank you, Mr. Bistro, for the excellent coverage on Telos and sparing me from having to go risk my precious items down there.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it is always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very much. With that being said, we will see you all next week, everyone. Thank you for sharing your time with us. And remember, we're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes if you want to come and say hello to us. See you next week.
See you.
Bye.